This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferrant. What does end-of-life planning look like to you? Maybe you think about your stuff and who's going to get what. What about all the important stuff that isn't property? Your life story, the lessons you've learned, what you want to communicate to people after you're gone. Our next guest says those words can be more valuable than possessions, and we can pass our messages on to our loved ones in something called an ethical will. It's a document you write to share with friends and family when you're gone. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you done this, or has someone, a loved one in your life, done this and left it for you? What would you put down in yours? What would be a message you'd leave behind for people if you wrote one? Do you have a question about how to do this, how it works? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Steve Leder is a rabbi and an author. His newest book is called For You When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. Rabbi Steve, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You are so welcome. I'm really pleased to be with you, Rob.
To the extent that I think of end-of-life planning, it's the will and making sure kids are taken care of and whatnot. Why should we think about the words and the messages we leave behind for people?
One of the saddest memories in the aftermath of my father's death was walking downstairs and seeing all of his stuff in a pile on the floor in the basement. And nobody wanted it. Goodwill didn't even want most of it. And there's this irony, mistake that most of us make most of the time, which is we spend so much of our time working to make money, to buy things, to leave behind for the people we love, thinking somehow the material will express our inner life, our spiritual life, our love for them, our hopes for them, our blessings for them, our life lessons. And I often say to people, that's like handing someone a picture of food. These physical material things, first of all, most of them, nobody wants. And secondly, even if they do, they can never come close to expressing and transmitting the great legacy, the great treasure you have for your loved ones when you're gone, which is your story. Your story. And if you don't tell it, it will never be heard. So this book is really a way where I can hold the reader's hand and help them tell the truth of their story. Walk them through these questions that will unfold your life story. And by the way, it has nothing to do with the facts of your life, Rob. You know, there's a difference between an obituary and a eulogy. An obituary tells you the facts of a person's life, but you really don't learn much about them. The fact that I was born in 1960 in St. Louis Park, Minnesota, and went to Aquila Elementary School, you know nothing about me other than my age. A eulogy and an ethical will are about the truth of our lives, the truth we tried to live and need to articulate for our loved ones. And it serves two purposes. Yes, it will hold and comfort and guide our loved ones when we're gone. But if you go through this book and you answer these questions with vulnerability and humility and honesty, you will be holding an MRI of your inner life up to the light, and you will be able to ask yourself a very profound and important question, which is, this is what I say my truth is. This is what I say I believe is important. Am I actually living that way? Or is my life mostly kabuki?
Let's talk about timing. I will admit, I have done one of these once. The night before I went in for a very routine surgery, my odds were real good. Here I am. I'm still here. But I thought, I better put something down, leave it up on my computer screen. Last message of love for my family, just in case. Mm-hmm. You make the case that wherever we are, this is something we should probably do now-ish.
Is it ever too soon or too late to ask yourself, am I living in alignment with my truest ideals? Why wait? You know, a journalist asked me last week in the pre-launch interviews for the book, because it only came out a couple days ago, asked me one of those trick journalist questions, which is, if you had to summarize your book in two words, what would they be? And it came to me immediately. Don't wait. Don't wait because you really never know. I didn't know my last conversation with my dad was my last conversation with my dad. I didn't know. So don't wait because you never know, but also don't wait because living in alignment with our truth, that is a meaningful, purposeful, beautiful life. I have found that the most unhappy people I know are people whose professed values and lived values are not the same. That dissonance is incredibly difficult to live with because it's a double life of sorts. So don't wait to ask these questions and tell your story and then live up to the truth of that story.
We're talking to Rabbi Steve Leder about his new book, For You When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a story of your own to share, have you written something like this down? Did a loved one leave something like this behind for you? Do you have questions on how to do it? Call 800-642-1234. Rabbi Steve, the heart of your book is these 12 questions, and I love these because I had a hard time knowing where to start on doing this. You give some great questions. One of them, and I think this is one of those things that will inform a lot of people about who you were and what you valued, was about what makes you happy. Can you talk about that question and things you heard when you asked people about that?
Yes. So I write an essay for each chapter on the question, and then I invited about 40 people, an incredibly diverse group of people, to answer the question for themselves, and then obviously curated some of those answers and made them part of the book. And this question about what makes you happy revealed a very interesting set of common denominators. One of the things we learn when we think deeply about our own happiness is that real happiness, I'm talking about transcendent, I'm not talking about a bowl of ice cream, I'm talking about transcendent, otherworldly kind of happiness, jumping for joy kind of happiness, happiness that makes life feel worth it all, is almost always, in fact, I would say always the result of, as I say it in the book, the fruit of a slow-growing tree. Unless we really invest in something or someone, it is very unlikely to bring us a deep kind of happiness. The happiness will be fleeting. And the second thing that this question reveals is that happiness is togetherness. In other words, this highest level of human fulfillment, of joy, of happiness, is almost always something celebrated in the presence of others. And it's communal. It's part of being outside of your own particularistic needs and wants, and it's impossible to celebrate alone the way you can celebrate with your tribe, with your community. You know, I had a very interesting conversation this morning on a different NPR station, and the host said, you know, she's always heard that the Mediterranean diet has kept people healthy and resulted in longevity. And she said to me, I don't think it's the food. I think it's the fact that in that culture, generations sit together around the table. They eat together. They cook together. They celebrate together. They mourn together. They're not scattered all over the planet the way so many families are in our culture. And I thought that was a very interesting insight. There's a piece in the book that was written by one of the kids who grew up in my congregation who spent a semester in South America. And I asked her when she came back, what's different about them. And she said, well, they're much happier. They have much less, but they're much happier because they're always cooking and eating and singing and dancing together.
We're talking to Rabbi Steve Leder about his new book. It's called For You, When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. He says, write it down. Leave that message. Make it available to people, your loved ones, for when you're gone. And he's got lots of question prompts to help you figure out what to write, what message to leave. Call 800-642-1234 if you'd like to join in. Have you done something like this or thought about doing it but put it off? What would you want to communicate to your loved ones when you are gone? What blessing would you want to pass on to them? What advice from your own life would you want to pass on? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking about ethical wills, documents you write to share your life story, to pass on to your loved ones when you die. Rabbi Steve Leder stays with us. His new book is called For You, When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions for our guest, maybe to share a message that you hope to pass on or that someone shared with you or that you wish they had shared. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jeanette joins us now in Milwaukee. Jeanette, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Jeanette?
Well, what I want to bring up is that one of the things that made me happiest in my life was committing adultery with somebody I love very much who was also married. And we were lovers for 5 years, and I don't regret any of it, and I don't think he did either.
Jeanette, is that something you would want to share with people after you're gone?
No.
Well, thank you, Jeanette, for sharing it with us. Wow. You have one of your questions is about regrets, Rabbi Steve, and also yes. There's another about following our heart, whether it leads us in the right or wrong direction. There's a lot there.
Yeah, well, I first of all appreciate the candor. And secondly, yes, my first question of the 12 is, what do you regret? Now, she clearly doesn't regret it, and that's okay. I'm not judgmental about that. What is interesting about the regret question is, again, the common denominator, which is that what most people regret most in their life is not something they did, but something they didn't do. The opportunity they didn't grasp, the words they didn't say, the forgiveness they didn't grant, the trip they didn't take, the job they didn't quit. This is a fascinating thing because, obviously, as I often say to people, I've given up all hope of a better past, which is a very powerful way of thinking, really. It really helps people realize I've got to move forward. But we can use the past to create a different present and a different future. And this idea of opening with the first question being one about regret was very intentional because to answer that question, you have to crack yourself open. You have to be vulnerable. You have to be humble. And it puts you in the right headspace to answer the 11 questions to follow. And we learn much more from our failures and regrets than from our successes. Much more.
Thanks for the call, Jeanette, at 800-642-1234. One thing you get into, and I think people probably think a lot about this either later in their lives or as they're about to lose someone. Do we have to reconcile? Do we have to forgive someone who has been toxic in our lives or something we may have done, something that we've seen as unforgivable? If I'm reading you right, you say not always.
That's correct. I often, Rob, get a call that goes something like this. Steve, I haven't talked to my mother in 10 years. I text her on her birthday. That's it. Ever since I was a little girl, we've never been close. She's always made me feel terrible about myself. She's narcissistic. She's withholding, et cetera. But now that she's dying, I think I'm going to go back and I'm hopeful we're going to have a great visit because I feel like I'm going to be terribly filled with guilt and shame when she dies because I cut her out of my life. To which I respond, I doubt it. The truth is, you're more likely to be relieved. And very often, Rob, the person looks at me with this look as if to say, how does he know? Is that okay? Does that make me a horrible person? No. There are relationships in our lives that simply are toxic. They cannot be fixed. Not everything that's broken can be fixed. Not every breach can be repaired. And what that question is really about in terms of leaving a legacy for our loved ones is self-respect. That there is a point in all of our lives that is very instructive when we either have to stand up and protect ourselves or be the victim. And that's a powerful lesson for everyone to follow.
We are talking to Rabbi Steve Leder about his new book. It's called For You When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story, looking at the idea of leaving a document behind, an ethical will, and that the words we leave behind for our loved ones may be a lot more valuable than the possessions that are usually covered in normal kinds of wills. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Luann joins us now in North Minnesota. Luann, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What did you want to tell us about Luann?
Well, I just wanted to say that my kids have asked me to write my story, so I have started it, and it's been rather interesting to go through my life again. I'm 71, so I've got a lot to go through.
Yeah, let me make an unsolicited suggestion, Luann, if I may. And I'm a fellow Minnesotan, by the way. Okay, so I would just try to be sure that you're not just writing a biography, that you're not just putting down the facts of your life, but also the truths that you have learned to live by and that you value and hold most dear, because that's the great bequest you can bequeath upon your children when you're gone.
Luann, thanks. Thanks so much, and good luck writing that up. I appreciate you sharing that with us. Rabbi Steve, there's a moment in your book. You get a note that prices are about to go up at the local cemetery, so you go to get your spot. And this is an amazing, even if people don't do this physically, I think this is a great visualization. You're standing there, and you're wondering, you know, as people gather for your funeral, what you wish you could communicate with them. I think that's a great thing to meditate on in some ways before writing this stuff.
It's very powerful to think about what you want your epitaph to be. And if you could stand up at your own funeral and look out at your family and friends, what would your final blessing for them be? Because then you get to ask a really profound and important question, which is, if that's my goal, am I living in a way that will take me there? If my goal is to stand up at my own funeral and look out at my family and friends and say, I love my family. You meant the world to me. I couldn't breathe without you. I'm so grateful for you. But I haven't, you know, called my sister in 3 years. Really? So are we living in alignment with the ways in which we say we want to be remembered? If my headstone, if my epitaph is going to be, as most of them are, loving husband, father, grandfather, friend, am I living that way? Am I doubling down on my relationships in this crazy hurry and scurry world of ours? So this is a very powerful exercise for today, for tomorrow, and for our loved ones when we're gone.
Did you find when you wrote this, or maybe when other people do this, that it turns out not just to be about after you're gone, but what you do between now and then? Does it actually change behavior?
Every time.
What?
Every time.
Now, I want to go practical here for a moment. I mentioned pre-surgically, I just left a note on a computer screen and hoped if the surgery didn't go well, people were going to stumble across it. On a practical level, how do we write a thing and make sure it gets to the people we're hoping to talk to?
There are a couple of ways. Not everyone is as fortunate as I am to be able to publish it in a book. But I really believe in not just the written word, but the printed word. You know, we have videos of our kids when they were little, and then we turned them into DVDs, and now they're in some dusty drawer somewhere because we don't even have a DVD player anymore. And you got to fast forward and rewind and look for what you want to find. I don't believe this should be done by video. And video, when you're talking, it's just not as deliberate. Write it out, print it out, depending upon the age of your loved ones for whom it is intended. Literally read it to them. It is so moving. Everyone's crying by the end, and it is so beautiful. And then what we did is we bound it with our estate plan so that when we do die, whether suddenly or expectedly, our kids are who really my ethical will is written to my children. They will literally read that before they get to the stuff. So I'm a big believer in writing this out, reading it to your loved ones, handing them a copy, and binding a copy in with your legal will and your estate plan.
We'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing this with us today.
My honor. Thank you, Rob.
That's Rabbi Steve Leader with us today to talk about how to write what's called an ethical will. You can read about it in his new book. It's called For You, When I Am Gone, 12 Essential Questions to Tell a Life Story. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, we may try to avoid sadness in our lives, but sometimes we may need to embrace it. That's according to the author of the new book, Bittersweet. And it's this week's edition of Food Friday with a look at the healing power of baking for our mental and emotional well-being. Plus, you get to eat some delicious bread along the way. All that and more. It's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time on the Ideas Network. Coming up after the news, we learn how employers can attract and retain workers by helping them manage their family caregiving responsibilities. Plus, coming up tonight, the U.S. House Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol plans a hearing tonight. Join us for live NPR coverage that starts at 7. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, crime is becoming a political issue in some midterm election races across the country. We'll talk to a historian about other times that crime has been important in politics and what those examples may teach us about today. First, the continuing labor shortage in Wisconsin has gotten a lot of attention, and part of the problem is that many workers are feeling stretched thin between work and their role as family caregivers. According to a new report, about 1 in 4 working adults in Wisconsin are adult caregivers, meaning they provide care or financial assistance to either an older family member, an adult relative with a disability, or maybe a spouse with a long-term illness. In a survey, Wisconsin family caregivers say that caregiving is having a big impact on their work and personal lives. Our next guests say there's good news. There's a lot of assistance and resources out there, and they're hoping to spread the word to caregivers and to their employers. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are we talking about you? Do you provide family care, maybe for a loved one with a disability, a senior in your family, you name it? Are you also working part or full-time in a job in addition to that? How are you managing it? How are you juggling it? Have you found help out there from one source or another? And how does your employer work with you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lynn Gall is Family Caregiver Support Programs Manager with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources. Lynn, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for inviting us.
And Harriet Redmond is Executive Director of WisconsinCIBS and a co-chair, along with Lynn, of the Employer Engagement Work Group with the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. Harriet, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
Lynn, I'll start with you. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance does?
Yes. The Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance was formed to address the needs of family, really any family member or friend who provides ongoing care to someone at home. Our mission is really to improve resource coordination, increase access to supports, and to sustain Wisconsin families into the future.
And I gave some examples. Can you talk about what we mean by family caregiving? Now, we're not talking about, you know, a parent of kids in this category, though they may also be that, I guess.
Right, right. When we did this survey, we did define them as what we would consider to be outside of the traditional child rearing arena. This is really that in addition to raising children without a disability, this is caring for a family member, a friend, or it could be a young child or an adult child who has a disability that someone continues to care for years after, like another child might have left home already.
Mm-hmm. And Harriet, there's a survey now of people who are providing this kind of care here in Wisconsin. What stood out to you about how caregiving affected their work lives and how they balance that with their personal needs?
Well, the big learning from the report was almost 8 out of 10 caregivers report having their work life interrupted. And that could be interrupted by phone calls, that could be interrupted by needing to take a parent or a spouse or a child with a disability to an appointment, therapy or medical. And often those are right in the middle of the day when workers are trying to be their most productive. They also have to provide caregiving services in those primetime hours as well.
And Harriet, is it to the point for some people where they think, you know, maybe I can't sustain a job or at least a full-time job while I'm trying to do this caregiving as well?
It is. For 56% of the caregivers that were in the study reported they didn't feel that their caregiving and balancing that with work was sustainable. So they had been using tools such as rearranging their work schedule or maybe leaving or arriving at work a little earlier, a little later, even missing days of work, cutting their hours. Those are all things that they use. Those are tools that they use, but still find it can be very unsustainable and have to consider whether they continue to work or not.
We are talking about caregivers in Wisconsin, people caring for loved ones in their lives, maybe with a disability or long-term illness, and how they balance that with their work lives. 1 in 4 adult workers in Wisconsin are doing at least some of this kind of caregiving. We have Lynn Gall and Harriet Redman with us. They're part of a survey, and they're part of the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance. You could join in if you have a story to share at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring a caller on now. Elizabeth is with us in Neenah. Elizabeth, hi.
Hi there.
What did you want to tell us about Elizabeth?
At home, arriving home from work early because 56 has autism and he receives care services from an agency, but like many companies, the agency is having trouble recruiting enough staff. And so today I'm going home early and I'll be taking 2 days vacation, 1 day tomorrow and 1 day on Monday to cover that kind of challenge. And so I'm living exactly what Harriet was just describing.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for sharing that story with us. Lynn, Elizabeth points out another problem here that workforce shortage is affecting caregiving as well, putting more stress on people like Elizabeth.
Right.
Well, I can speak to that very personally.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
Because I'm in the same boat.
Okay.
I care for an adult child who has a disability, and I'm working from home today because a lack of caregivers, especially, it has been a problem, but especially now since COVID, the caregiving crisis has been even greater. So we have to balance how we manage our work and our caregiving.
Elizabeth, thanks a lot for sharing that story with us. Lynn, part of what you're doing in the survey is to highlight the concerns people have. I know you're hoping to point people toward resources as well. What kind of help might be out there for Elizabeth or other people in her position?
You're right. Part of the reason we did this survey was because we think that one characteristic of the workforce shortage that we're seeing right now is, you know, we're overlooking that family caregivers need support in the workplace. And so some of the things that we would like to do as a result of what we learned in this study is to make sure, first of all, that everybody, every employer, every person who is a caregiver knows that there are community resources available through your Aging and Disability Resource Center should be the first step for anyone to find out what's available in your community. Every community has one, and there we offer a whole range of different programs that are either no cost, low cost, or available through, you know, state and federal funding or a community organization that might be able to give them support.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Joy is with us in West Bend. Joy, hi.
Hi. I'm a woman in my early 70s. We have a daughter with Down syndrome. I was a professional, but kind of had to give up my profession to be able to stay at home and take care of our daughter and make sure that her behavior problems at school were handled well. And I've just noticed lately that my husband and I are kind of isolated. You know, we don't fit into the group of people our age who have grandchildren, are playing with them, people who are going on trips, and people who are pursuing their own interests. We still have lots of responsibility to take care of a person who is dependent. So just wondering, we do have services, you know, we're hooked up with the IRIS program, so we have long-term care services for our daughter, but I'm still occupied every day in getting our daughter up and moving, you know, getting her mental health services, getting her to an activity, or getting her able to want to be in an activity somewhere else. So,
Joy, thanks for sharing your story with us. Harriet, do you have advice on the isolation, it sounds like, Joy and her husband are feeling?
Yes, it's very easily to become isolated for just the reasons that the caller was mentioning. And caregivers as a group are pretty bad at finding time for themselves. So we really have to encourage one another to do so and to get out, but that requires caregivers, and that oftentimes is the barrier to making that happen. Another resource that could be helpful is there's an organization called Respite Care Association of Wisconsin, and they're available to help find respite care providers. And respite is that break that adults who are caring for their disabled children or a spouse or a parent, it's that break that they need in order to avoid isolation. Because once you go down that path, it's difficult and it doesn't lead to good things. You want to be able to maintain friends and be active in the community. So finding those caregivers is a very important step. And also just finding time and not feeling guilty for taking care of yourself, whether that is a day away, just enjoying yourself, or even reminding yourself you need to make appointments with the doctor for yourself, and not just have that as a priority for your loved one with a disability or long-term illness. So it gets complex, but it really underscores the need for respite. And sometimes you just need to ask somebody to make a few phone calls for you. That sometimes I've commented that sometimes a telephone is a pretty heavy object because you get busy with so many things and you just can't make that phone call. But maybe you can ask someone else to help you with just making a phone call. Maybe it's a neighbor or a friend or someone from church or another social circle that you can connect with.
Joy, thanks a lot for sharing your experience. Good luck to you. We're talking to Lynn Gall and Harriet Redmond from the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, talking about family caregivers in the workforce. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you are juggling these dual responsibilities, you're at the workplace full or part-time and providing care for a family member, what are the biggest challenges? What help have you found? What resources might you want to recommend to other people? And if you're an employer, we'd love to hear from you as well. Do you have employees who have need of some kind of flexibility to do this kind of caregiving? Are you able to provide that for them? If so, how? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation with Lynn Gall and Harriet Redman from the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance, looking at results of a survey they did in partnership with UW Extension, looking at family caregivers, some of the challenges they face dealing with their work lives and their home lives, and how employers can offer their employees more support, maybe more flexibility. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your story, your experience, or your question for our guests. That's 800-642-1234. Lynn, you mentioned wanting to get resource information out to employers. Based on what you heard in the survey, are there things employers can do to support their employees who are doing this dual role? They're working, they're providing this family care.
Yes, there definitely are. And, you know, when we're doing this, we understand that not all workplaces are able to make changes for employees as easily as others, depending on the type of business. Flexible scheduling or, working remotely may not be an option, or at least not a long-term option. However, there's probably something that every employer can do, whether they're a large employer or a small employer, or even if a person is self-employed. So one of the things we want employers to think of is to think of these community organizations like Aging and Disability Resource Centers, Harriet's Organization of Wisconsin, the Respite Care Association of Wisconsin. We are your partners, and to look at us as another resource in addition to the benefits they may already be providing, and to work with us and to make your employees aware that we exist, and making your employees feel comfortable in talking about their caregiving role is really the first thing supervisors and employers can do, is because a lot of people don't even want to tell their employer that this is their home life situation or these are the struggles they're having, because they're afraid that that's going to somehow negatively impact them. So being honest about that and making people feel comfortable talking about that, it really is the first step. And the survey we did was actually this UW Extension survey. It is available free to any employer who wants to use it to survey their own workforce and find out how many working caregivers do you have in your company. You may think you know, but they may not be telling you. So it's an anonymous survey that's free and available to any employer who wants to start there. And once you know what is in your company, then you can then go from there, just deciding what you can and may or may not be able to offer.
And Harriet, before we go back to our callers, a point made in the report is this isn't just something employers might do out of the goodness of their hearts. If they're having trouble hiring and retaining workers, this could be a worker retention strategy, right?
Definitely. That wasn't the main focus of our study, but we wanted to study things that we hadn't learned before. And we had learned from other studies that employers can identify savings when they have addressed the needs of their employees who are caregivers. And in a previous survey, 44% of employees in a business, 44% of them were caregivers. So it isn't one or two people. It's usually could be half of your workforce have caregiving responsibilities. And when they realize that, and they can offer educational programs, or they can offer at least point them to the resources, or review their flex time or their remote working arrangements, when they can review those and tailor them for caregivers, they'll keep their caregivers, or they'll keep their employees, which is a big savings. And they can also attract other good, excellent workers who also have to balance caregiving.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Mary is with us in DeForest. Hi, Mary.
Hello.
Hi. What did you want to bring up, Mary?
So my husband and I are sole caretakers of my in-laws. They're in their 80s and with multiple health issues. So we've been providing meals and cleaning and just kind of checking up on them every day, taking them to appointments and all that. Is there any kind of state-funded program that helps family home caretakers, I guess?
Mary, thanks for that call. Lynn, is there help out there for people in Mary's situation?
There definitely is. The programs that I manage, the National Family Caregiver Support Program, and there's also a Wisconsin Alzheimer's Family Caregiver Support Program. They're both designed to do exactly what you're talking about. They can help provide people to come in and do the very things you're talking about so you can get some respite and a break from having to caregive all the time. So they will come in and do in-home chores. They can come in and help with bathing. They provide the funds to do that. We're with the shortage of workers and out in the community, we have to have agencies that can come in and do that. But we do, it's available for anyone who's caring for someone age 60 or older. So then it sounds like the folks at your in-laws, I believe you said it was, that they are over age 60. So you would definitely qualify for that program. And anybody else out there who, if you're caring for someone who's got a diagnosis of dementia or Alzheimer's disease, you also would qualify.
Thanks for that call, Mary. Hope that helps. Jane joins us now in Manitowoc. Jane, hi.
Hello. I am a retired county veteran service officer. So if your caregivers are taking care of a veteran, especially if they served during wartime or if they had exposure to chemicals and stuff in service, they may qualify for a caregiver stipend for the caregiver, and then they also, the veteran may qualify and the widow may qualify for compensation or pension from the VA.
Jane, thanks a lot for that suggestion. Appreciate that. Lynn, is there a first step that people should take? And we've heard a bunch of different opportunities and resources out there. What, if somebody's in a situation of caring for, say, an older family member, what should their first call be to find out what's in their area, what's available to them?
Right. Their first call should really be to their local Aging and Disability Resource Center. The ADRC has got trained staff. They do options counseling with anyone who wants it, which is really to sit down and talk through your options. It's unbiased. It's just to let you know the different options that are available and then to kind of help you connect to those resources once you make a decision. So that would be the very first place to go, because I know a lot of people aren't even really aware of everything that's out there until you need it and you start looking. You may find things that exist right in your own community that you had no idea were there.
Jane, thanks again for that call. Harriet, as someone who not only works on these issues, but as you mentioned, this is a part of your life too. Can you leave us with some words of encouragement to people to seek out resources that are out there and get some help if it's available?
I surely can. I would just encourage anyone to reach out and speak up. Let people know what your needs are. You probably have people who've said, hey, anytime you need help, let me know. Let them know. And it's not, don't feel guilty about that. Speak up and let people know what you need.
And Lynn, leave us with a thought for maybe, again, that employer to help that person in need.
I really encourage employers to think about the benefits to yourself as well as to your workers in supporting them. And if you've been a caregiver yourself, the employers that we have seen, some employers who've been doing some really great supportive work, and it's those employers really who have been in those shoes. They've been in caregivers themselves. And once you've been there, I think you understand how important it is and how appreciative your employees will be that you understand. And their loyalty will increase. You'll see their work improve. And I think it will, in the end, it'll pay off for you. So please consider making some, doing some work in this area.
Lynn, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Harriet, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
I've been talking to Harriet Redmond, Executive Director of WisconSIBS, and Lynn Gall, Family Caregiver Support Programs Manager for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services Bureau of Aging and Disability Resources, looking at the results of a new survey looking at family caregivers in Wisconsin and how they fit into the workplace. Coming up, a historian joins the show to talk about the history of tough-on-crime politics and what it means for this year's elections. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.